And look at it. I used to help him Xerox those and pass them out. She winced. Never mind, maybe I'll be glad we came later. She gave a wobbly smile, shrugging her jacket back on. I'm heading out. I'll see you guys at the farmhouse. Isabel watched Clary go, a small figure making its way up the street, unnoticed by other pedestrians. Then she glanced down at the flyer in her hand. Simon Lewis, Eric Hillchurch, Kirk Duplass, and Matt Charlton. The Mortal Instruments. May 19, Prospect Park, Banshell. Bring this flyer, get money off your entrance fee. Isabel's breath hitched in her throat. Magnus. He had been watching Clary too. He glanced over now, and his glance fell on the flyer. They both stared at it. Magnus whistled between his teeth. The Mortal Instruments? His band name. The paper shook in Isabel's hand. Okay, Magnus, we have to. You said if he remembered anything. Magnus glanced after Clary, but she was long gone. All right, he said. But if it doesn't work, if he doesn't want it, we can never tell her. Isabel was crumpling the paper in her fist, already reaching for her steely with the other hand. Whatever you say, but we have to at least try. Magnus nodded. Shadows chasing shadows in his gold-green eyes. Isabel could tell he was worried about her, afraid that she'd be hurt, disappointed, and she wanted to be angry at him and grateful to him all at once. We will. It had been another weird day, Simon thought. First, the lady behind the counter in Java Jones who'd asked him where his friend was, the pretty girl who always came in with him and always ordered her coffee black. Simon had stared. He didn't really have any close girlfriends, certainly no one whose coffee preferences he might be expected to know. When he told the barista she must have been thinking of someone else, she'd looked at him like he was crazy. And then the red-headed girl who'd come up to him on the steps of St. Xavier's. The front of the school was deserted now. Eric had been supposed to give Simon a ride home, but he disappeared when the girl had come up to Simon, and he hadn't reappeared. It was nice that Eric thought he could pick up ladies with such blithe ease, Simon thought, but annoying when it meant that he was going to have to take the subway home. Simon hadn't even thought about trying to hit on her, not really. She seemed so fragile despite the fairly badass tattoos that decorated her arms and collarbone. Maybe she was crazy. The evidence pointed that way, but her green eyes had been huge and sad when she'd looked at him. He'd been reminded of the way he'd looked himself, the day of his father's funeral. Like something had punched a hole right through his ribcage and squeezed his heart. Lost like that, no, she hadn't been hitting on him. She'd really believed they'd meant something important to each other once. Maybe he had known that girl, he thought. Maybe it was something he'd forgotten. Who remembered the friends you had in kindergarten? And yet, he couldn't shake an image of her, not looking sad, but smiling over her shoulder at him. Something in her hand, a drawing? He shook his head in frustration. The image was gone like a silver-quick fish slipping off a line. He cast his mind back, desperately trying to remember. He found himself doing that a lot lately. Bits of memories would come to him, fragments of poetry he didn't know how he'd learned, glancing recollections of voices, dreams he'd wake up from shaking and sweating and unable to recall what had happened in them. Dreams of desert landscapes, of echoes, the taste of blood, a bow and arrow in his hands. He'd learned archery in summer camp, but he'd never cared that much about it, so why was he dreaming about it now? Not being able to get back to sleep, the aching sense that there was something missing. He didn't know what, but something, like a weight in the middle of his chest. He'd put it down to too many D&D campaigns, junior year stress, and worrying about colleges. As his mother said, once you started worrying about the future, you started obsessing about the past. Anyone sitting here? Said a voice. Simon looked up and saw a tall man with spiky black hair standing over him. He wore a velvet prep school blazer with a crest emblazoned on it in glittering thread, and at least a dozen rings. There was something odd about his features. What? No, Simon said, wondering how many strangers were going to accost him today. You can sit if you want. The man glanced down and made a face. I see that many pigeons have pooped upon these stairs, he remarked. I shall remain standing if that's not too rude. Simon shook his head mutely. I'm Magnus, he smiled, showing blinding white teeth. Magnus Bane. Are we long-lost friends by any chance? Simon said. Just wondering. No, we never got along all that well, said Magnus. Long-lost acquaintances, compadres, my cat liked you. Simon scrubbed his hands over his face. I think I'm going crazy, he remarked to no one in particular.
Well then, you should be all right with what I'm about to tell you.
Magnus turned his head slightly to the side.
Isabel?
Out of nowhere, a girl appeared. Maybe the most beautiful girl Simon had ever seen. She had long black hair that spilled over a silver dress and made him want to write bad songs about starry nights. She also had tattoos, the same ones the other girl had sported, black and swirling, covering her arms and bare legs. Hello, Simon, she said. Simon just stared. It was entirely out of the realm of anything he had ever imagined that a girl who looked like this would ever say his name like that. Like it was the only name that matters. His brain sputtered to a stop like an old car.
Huh? He said.
Magnus held out a long-fingered hand, and the girl placed something into it. A book, bound in white leather with the title stamped on it in gold. Simon couldn't quite see the words, but they were etched in an elegant calligraphic hand.
This, Magnus said, is a book of spells.
There didn't seem to be a response to that, so Simon didn't try for one.
The world is full of magic, said Magnus, and his eyes were sparkling. Demons and angels, werewolves and fairies and vampires, you knew all this once. You had magic, but it was taken from you. The idea was that you would live out the rest of your life without it, without remembering it. That you would forget the people you loved if they knew about magic. That you would spend the rest of your life ordinary.
He turned the book over in his slim fingers, and Simon caught sight of a title in Latin. Something about the sight sent a zing of energy through his body.
And there's something to be said for that, for being relieved of the burden of greatness. Because you were great, Simon. You were a daylighter, a warrior. You saved lives and slew demons, and the blood of angels rocketed through your veins like sunlight.
Magnus was grinning now, a little manically.
And I don't know, it just strikes me as a little fascist to take that all away.
Isabel tossed her dark hair back. Something glittered at the hollow of her throat. A red ruby. Simon felt the same zing of energy, stronger this time, as if his body were yearning towards something his mind couldn't recall.
Fascist? She echoed.
Yes, Magnus said.
Clary was born special. Simon here had specialness thrust upon him. He adapted. Because the world isn't divided into the special and the ordinary. Everyone has the potential to be extraordinary. As long as you have a soul and a free will, you can be anything, do anything, choose anything. Simon should get to choose.
Simon swallowed against his dry throat. I'm sorry, he said, but what are you talking about? Magnus tapped the book in his hand.
I've been searching for a way out of this spell, this curse on you, he said.
Simon almost protested that he wasn't cursed, but subsided.
This thing that made you forget. Then I figured it out. I ought to have figured it out a lot sooner, but they've always been so strict about ascensions. So particular. But then Alec mentioned to me. They're desperate for new shadow hunters now. They lost so many in the Dark War, it would be easy. You've got so many people to vouch for you. You could be a shadow hunter, Simon, like Isabel. I can do little with this book. I can't fix it completely, and I can't make you what you were before. But I can prepare you to be able to ascend. And once you do, once you're a shadow hunter, he can't touch you. You'll have the Clave's protection, and the rules about not telling you about the shadow world, those will be gone.
Simon looked at Isabel. It was a little like looking at the sun, but the way she was looking back at him made it easier. She was looking at him as if she had missed him, though he knew that wasn't possible.
There's really magic? He asked. Vampires and werewolves and wizards?
Warlocks, Magnus corrected. And all of that, it exists?
It exists, Isabel said. Her voice was sweet, a little husky, and familiar.
He remembered the smell of sunlight and flowers suddenly, a taste like copper in his mouth.
He saw desert landscapes stretching out under a demon sun, and a city with towers that shimmered as if they were made of ice and glass. It's not a fairy tale, Simon. Being a shadow hunter means being a warrior. It's dangerous, but if it's right for you, it's amazing. I wouldn't ever want to be anything else.
It's your decision, Simon Lewis, said Magnus. Remain in the existence you have, go to college, study music, get married, live your life. Or you can have an uncertain life of shadows and dangers. You can have the joy of reading the stories of incredible happenings, or you can be part of the story. He leaned closer, and Simon saw the light spark off his eyes, and realized why he'd thought they were old. They were gold-green and slit-pupiled like a cat's, not human eyes at all. The choice is up to you.
It was always a surprise that werewolves turned out to have such a deft touch with floral arrangements, Clary thought. Luke's old pack, Myers now, had pitched in to decorate the grounds around the farmhouse where the reception was being held, and the old barn where the ceremony had taken place. The pack had overhauled the entire structure. Clary remembered playing with Simon in the old hayloft that creaked, the cracks and peeling paint, the uneven floorboards. Now everything had been sanded down and refinished, and the post and beam room glowed with the soft glow of old wood. Someone had a sense of humor, too. The beams had been wrapped with chains of wild lupine. Big wooden vases held arrays of cattails and goldenrod and lilies. Clary's own bouquet was wildflowers, though it had gone a bit limp from being clutched in her hand for so many hours. The whole ceremony had gone by in something of a blur. Vows, flowers, candlelight, her mother's happy face, the glow in Luke's eyes. In the end, Jocelyn had eschewed a fancy dress and gone with a plain white sundress and her hair up in a messy bun with, yes, a coloured pencil stuck through it. Luke, handsome in dove grey, didn't seem to mind at all. The guests were all milling about now. Several werewolves were efficiently clearing away the rows of chairs and stacking the presents on a long table. Clary's own gift, a portrait she had painted of her mother and Luke, hung on one wall. She had loved drawing it, had loved having the brush and paints in her hands again, drawing not to make runes, but only to make something lovely that someone might someday enjoy. Jocelyn was busy hugging Maya, who looked amused at Jocelyn's enthusiasm. Bat was chatting with Luke, who seemed dazed, but in a good way. Clary smiled in their direction and slipped out of the barn onto the path outside. The moon was high, shining down on the lake at the foot of the property, making the rest of the farm glow. Lanterns had been hung in all the trees and they swung in the faint wind. The paths were lined with tiny glowing crystals, one of Magnus's contributions. Though where was Magnus? Clary hadn't seen him in the crowd at the ceremony, though she'd seen nearly everyone else. Maya and Bat, Isabel and Silva, Alec very serious in a dark suit, and Jace having defiantly discarded his tie somewhere, probably in some nearby foliage. Even Robert and Maris were there, suitably gracious. Clary had no idea what was going on with their relationship and didn't want to ask anyone. Clary headed down toward the largest of the white tents. The DJ station was set up for Bat, and some of the pack and other guests were busy clearing a space for dancing. The tables were draped with long white cloths and set with old china from the farmhouse, sourced from Luke's years of scouring flea markets in the small towns around the farm. None of it matched, and the glasses were old jam jars and the centerpieces were hand-picked blue asters and clover floating in mismatched pottery bowls, and Clary thought it was the prettiest wedding she'd ever seen. A long table was set up with champagne glasses. Jace was standing near it, and as he saw her, he raised a glass of champagne and winked. He had gone the disheveled route, rumpled blazer and tousled hair and now no tie, and his skin was all gold from the beginning of summer, and he was so beautiful that it made her heart hurt. He was standing with Isabel and Alec. Isabel looked stunning with her hair swept up in a loose knot. Clary knew she'd never be able to pull off that sort of elegance in a million years, and she didn't care. Isabel was Isabel, and Clary was grateful she existed, making the world a little fiercer with every one of her smiles. Isabel whistled now, shooting a look across the tent. "Look at that!" Clary looked and looked again. She saw a girl who seemed about 19 years old. She had loose brown hair and a sweet face. She wore a green dress, a little old-fashioned in its style, and a jade necklace around her throat.
Clary had seen her before, in Alicante, talking to Magnus at the Claves party in Angel Square. She was holding the hand of a very familiar, very handsome boy with must-dark hair. He looked tall and rangy in an elegant black suit and white shirt that set off his high cheekbone face. As Clary watched, he leaned over to whisper something into her ear, and she smiled, her face lighting up. "Brother Zachariah," Isabel said. "Months January through December of the Hot Silent Brothers calendar. What's he doing here?"
"There's a Hot Silent Brothers calendar," said Alec. "Do they sell it?"
"Quit that," Isabel elbowed him. "Magnus will be here any minute."
"Where is Magnus?" Clary asked.
Isabel smiled into her champagne. "He had an errand." Clary looked back over towards Zachariah and the girl, but they had melted back into the crowd. She wished they hadn't. There was something about that girl that fascinated her. But a moment later, Jace's hand was around her wrist, and he was setting down his glass.
"Come dance with me," he said.
Clary looked over at the stage. Bat had taken his place at the DJ booth, but there was no music yet. Someone had placed an upright piano in the corner, and Katerina Loss, her skin glowing blue, was tinkling at the keys.
"There's no music," she said.
Jace smiled at her.
"We don't need it."
"And that's our cue to leave," Isabel said, seizing Alec by the elbow and hauling him off into the crowd. Jace grinned after her.
"Sentimentality gives Isabel hives," said Clary.
"But seriously, we can't dance with no music. Everyone will stare at us."
"Then let's go where they can't see us,"
Jace said, and drew her away from the tent. It was what Jocelyn called the blue hour now. Everything drenched in twilight, the white tent like a star and the grass soft, each blade shimmering like silver. Jace drew her back against him, fitting her body to his, wrapping his arms around her waist, his lips touching the back of her neck.
"We could go in the farmhouse," he said. "There are bedrooms."
She turned around in his arms and poked him in the chest firmly.
"This is my mother's wedding," she said. "We're not going to have sex. At all."
"But at all is my favorite way to have sex."
"The house is full of vampires," she told him cheerfully. "They were invited and they came last night. They've been waiting in there for the sun to go down."
"Luke invited vampires?"
"Maya did. Peace gesture. They're trying to all get along."
"Surely the vampires would respect our privacy."
"Surely not," Clary said, and she drew him firmly away from the path to the farmhouse,
into a copse of trees. It was shaded in here, and hidden, the ground all packed earth and roots, mountain mint with its starry white flowers growing around the trunks of the trees in clusters. She backed up against a tree trunk, pulling Jace with her, so that he leaned against her, his hands on either side of her shoulders as she rested in the cage of his arms. She smoothed her hands down over the soft fabric of his jacket.
"I love you," she said. He looked down at her.
"I think I know what Madame Dorothea meant," he said, "when she said I'd fall in love with the wrong person."
Clary's eyes widened. She wondered if she was about to be broken up with. If so, she would have a thing or two to say to Jace about his timing after she'd drowned him in the lake. He took a deep breath.
"You make me question myself," he said. "All the time, every day. I was brought up to believe I had to be perfect. A perfect warrior, a perfect son. Even when I came to live with the Lightwoods, I thought I had to be perfect, because otherwise they would send me away. I didn't think love came with forgiveness. And then you came along, and you broke everything I believed into pieces, and I started to see everything differently. You had so much love and so much forgiveness and so much faith. So I started to think that maybe I was worth that faith. That I didn't have to be perfect. I had to try, and that was good enough."
He lowered his eyelids so she could see the faint pulse at his temple, feel the tension in him.
"So I think you were the wrong person for the Jace that I was, but not the Jace that I am now. The Jace you helped make me. Who is, incidentally, a Jace I like much better than the old one. You've changed me for the better, and even if you left me, I would still have that."
He paused.
"Not that you should leave me," he added hastily, and leaned his head against hers, so their foreheads touched. "Say something, Clary."
His hands were on her shoulders, warm against her cool skin. She could feel them trembling. His eyes were gold, even in the blue light of twilight.
She remembered when she had found them hard and distant, even frightening, before she had grown to realize that what she was looking at was the expert shielding of 17 years of self-protection. 17 years of protecting his heart. "You're shaking," she said with some wonder. "You make me," he said, his breath against her cheek, and he slid his hands down her bare arms. "Every time. Every time." "Can I tell you a boring science fact?" she whispered. "I bet you didn't learn it in Shadowhunter history class." "If you're trying to distract me from talking about my feelings, you're not being very subtle about it." He touched her face. "You know I make speeches. It's okay. You don't have to make them back. Just tell me you love me."
"I'm not trying to distract you." She held up her hand and wiggled the fingers. "There are 100 trillion cells in the human body," she said. "And every single one of these cells of my body loves you. We shed cells and grow new ones, and my new cells love you more than the old ones. Which is why I love you more every day than I did the day before. It's science. And when I die, and they burn my body and I become ashes that mix with the air, and part of the ground and the trees and the stars, everyone who breathes that air or sees the flowers that grow out of the ground or looks up at the stars will remember you and love you because I love you that much." She smiled. "How was that for a speech?" He stared at her, rendered wordless for one of the first times in his life. Before he could answer, she stretched up to kiss him, a chaste press of lips to lips at first, but it deepened quickly. And soon he was parting her lips with his, tongue stroking into her mouth, and she could taste him, the sweetness of Jace spiked with the bite of champagne. His hands were feverishly running up and down her back, over the bumps of her spine, the silk straps of her dress, the bare wings of her shoulder blades pressing her into him. She slid her hands under his jacket, wondering if maybe they should have gone to the farmhouse after all, even if it was full of vampires. "Interesting," said an amused voice, and Clary pulled back from Jace quickly to see Magnus standing in a gap between the two trees. His tall figure was limned in the moonlight. He had eschewed anything particularly outrageous, and was dressed in a perfectly cut black suit that looked like a spill of ink against the darkening sky.
"Interesting," Jace echoed. "Magnus, what are you doing here?"
"Came to get you," Magnus said. "There's something I think you should see." Jace closed his eyes as if praying for patience.
"We are busy."
"Clearly," said Magnus. "You know, they say life is short, but it isn't all that short. It can be quite long, and you have all your lives to spend together, so I really suggest you come with me, because you're going to be sorry if you don't."
Clary broke away from the tree, her hand still in Jace's.
"Okay," she said.
"Okay," said Jace, following her. "Seriously?"
"I trust Magnus," Clary said. "If it's important, it's important."
"And if it's not, I'm going to drown him in the lake," Jace said, echoing Clary's earlier unspoken thought. She hid her grin in the dark.
Alex stood at the edge of the tent, watching the dancing. The sun was down enough now to simply be a red stripe painted across the distant sky, and the vampires had come up from the farmhouse and joined the party. Some discreet accommodation had been made for their tastes, and they mingled among the others, holding sleek metal flutes plucked from the champagne table, whose opacity hid the liquid inside. Lily, the head of the vampire clan of New York, was at the ivory keys of the piano, filling the room with the sound of jazz. Over the music, a voice said in Alec's ear,
"It was a lovely ceremony, I thought."
Alec turned and saw his father, his big hand clasped around a fragile champagne flute, staring out at the guests. Robert was a large man, broad-shouldered, never at his best in a suit. He looked like an overgrown schoolboy who'd been forced into it by an annoyed parent.
"Hi," Alec said.
He could see his mother across the room talking to Jocelyn. Maris had more streaks of grey in her dark hair than he remembered. She looked elegant, as she always did.
"It was nice of you to come," he added grudgingly.
Both his parents had been almost painfully grateful that he and Isabel had returned to them after the Dark War. Too grateful to be angry or scolding. Too grateful for Alec to say much of anything to either of them about Magnus. When his mother had returned to New York, he'd gathered the rest of his possessions from the Institute and moved into the loft in Brooklyn.
He was still in the Institute nearly every day. Still saw his mother often, but Robert had remained in Alicante, and Alec hadn't tried to contact him.
Pretend to be civil with Mum. All of that. Really nice.
Alec saw his father flinch. He'd meant to be gracious, but he'd never done gracious well. It always seemed like lying.
We're not pretending to be civil, said Robert. I still love your mother. We care about each other. We just can't be married.
We should have ended it earlier. We thought we were doing the right thing. Our intentions were good.
Road to hell, said Alec succinctly, and looked down at his glass. Sometimes, Robert said, you choose whom you want to be with when you're too young, and you change, and they don't change with you.
Alec took in a slow breath. His veins were suddenly sizzling with anger. If that's meant to be a dig at me and Magnus, you can shove it, he said. You gave up your rights to have any jurisdiction over me and my relationships when you made it clear that as far as you were concerned, a gay shadow hunter wasn't really a shadow hunter. He set his glass down on a nearby speaker. I'm not interested.
Alec.
Something about Robert's voice made Alec turn. He didn't sound angry, just broken.
I said unforgivable things, I know that, he said. But I have always been proud of you, and I am no less proud now.
I don't believe you.
When I was your age, younger, I had a parabatai, said Robert.
Yes, Michael Wayland, said Alec, not caring that he sounded bitter, not caring about the look on his father's face.
I know, it's why you took Jace in. I always thought you two must not have been particularly close. You didn't seem to miss him much, or mind that he was dead.
I didn't believe he was dead, said Robert.
I know that must seem hard to imagine. Our bond had been severed by the sentence of exile passed down by the Clave, but even before that we had grown apart. There was a time, though, when we were close, the best of friends. There was a time when he told me that he loved me.
Something about the weight his father put on the words brought Alec up short.
Michael Wayland was in love with you. I was not kind to him about it, said Robert. I told him never to say those words to me again. I was afraid, and I left him alone with his thoughts and feelings and fears, and we were never close again as we had been. I took Jace in to make up, in some small measure for what I had done, but I know there is no making up for it.
He looked at Alec, and his dark blue eyes were steady.
You think that I am ashamed of you, but I am ashamed of myself. I look at you and I see the mirror of my own unkindness to someone who never deserved it. We find in our children our own selves again, who might be made better than we are. Alec, you are so much a better man than I ever was or will be.
Alec stood frozen. He remembered his dream in the demon lands, his father telling everyone how brave he was, what a good shadow hunter and warrior. But he had never imagined his father telling him that he was a good man. It was a much better thing, somehow. Robert was looking at him with the lines of strain playing around his eyes and mouth. Alec couldn't help but wonder if he'd ever told anyone else about Michael, and what it had cost him to say it just now. He touched his father's arm lightly, the first time he had willingly touched him in months, and then dropped his hand.
Thank you, he said. For telling me the truth. It wasn't forgiveness, not exactly, but it was a start.
The grass was damp from the chill of the oncoming night. Clary could feel the cold soaking through her sandals as she made her way back toward the tent with Jason Magnus. Clary could see the rows of tables being set up, china and silverware flashing. Everyone had pitched in to help out. Even the people she usually thought of as almost unassailable in their reserve. Kadir, Gia, Maris. Music was coming from the tent. Bat was lounging up at the DJ station, but someone was playing jazz piano. She could see Alec standing with his father, talking intently. And then the crowd parted as she saw a blur of other familiar faces. Maya and Aline chatting, and Isabel standing near Simon, looking awkward.
Simon.
Clary came up short. Her heart skipped a beat and then another. She felt hot and cold all over as if she were about to faint. It couldn't be Simon. It had to be someone else, some other skinny boy with messy brown hair and glasses.
but he was wearing the same faded shirt she'd seen him in that morning, and his hair was still too long and in his face, and he was smiling.